All right, but if you're going to start preaching, that means I got to start singing, and they don't want that. They're not going to like that at all, Patsy. I'm just telling you. That isn't going to go well. Oh, Lord. I tell you, we are so deeply blessed. Thank you all so, so very much. I appreciate it. So I'm sure you've seen the TV commercials how sometimes when people are angry, they need a Snickers bar, you know, and it calms them down. Or if you're a fan of movies, maybe you've seen the movie The Hulk, okay? And you see what happens when he gets angry and he turns into this raging green monster and smashes things and does all. Maybe you work with somebody like that. God forbid, maybe you have to live with somebody like that and you're just stepping on eggshells all the time or something like that. Or do you remember in the Disney movie, The Emperor's New Groove, when Pacha comes home and he was supposed to visit with the emperor, but the emperor stood him up and his wife wants to know how the meeting went. And she just says, well, how'd it go? How was it? And he says, well, you know, he was busy. He couldn't see me. She goes, what? Remember how she goes off? She goes, well, that's fish roo. Emperor or no emperor? If I was there, I think I would go there myself right now. I would tell him. I'll tell him what's on my mind. I'll tell him what's going on. And you know I would. I would tell. And he's trying to get her to calm down. And she's just gone. And then finally she goes, I just got to watch something. That's how she handles her anger. She's got to watch something. That's what she's got to do. We all have our ways of handling anger and frustration. And in our scripture reading today, we see that Martha's way of handling her anger and her frustration is to go to Jesus. Which at first, that sounds like the perfect Sunday school answer. Yes, when you're angry and frustrated, you go to Jesus. Except she goes to Jesus to complain and to solicit and to say, get on my side, get after my sister, go sick him, go do that. And she's not really going to listen. She's going to Jesus to give him some orders about how things should be going. And that maybe he's slacking on his job a little bit. And that he needs to step it up and get with the program and get things right. Because this isn't fair and this isn't good and this isn't right. And on she goes. And we know this story. And the unfortunate thing is it captures Martha at her absolute worst. We all know the story. This is not one of Martha's shiny, bright moments. Now, I want you to think for a moment about your worst moment. The worst moment of your life. When, and I'm not talking about a tragedy. I'm talking about when you show the worst side of yourself. How would you like that to be your reputation? That every time people heard your name, that's the only thing they ever remembered about you. You hear the story of Martha and Mary, and immediately everybody goes, oh, that Martha. You know, everybody just judging her and condemning her, and that's all they ever want to talk about. The story does not go well for Martha. But before we start jumping on her, I want us to maybe have some perspective. Imagine. Let's say that we're going to wake up. Let's say it's a Saturday morning, because for some of us, Saturdays are our day off, and that's our relaxed day. And so let's imagine that it's a Saturday, okay? And you have an agenda, but it's a relaxed agenda. You don't have a time clock you have to punch. Yes, you're going to be busy, but it's going to be with activities that either you want to do or that need to be done, but you get to move at your pace, and now you're in the afternoon, and it's hot, and you're thinking, you know, maybe I'm going to take a nap. Or maybe there's a game on and you want to watch the game. And you go, I think I'm going to go. Or maybe there's a book you've been wanting to read, but it's a little bit hot because it's been hot. And you're thinking, I want to get out of the sun. I want to get relaxed. And I just want to be refreshed. And all of a sudden, there's a knock on your door. And there's 13 people. And they just walk in. Kind of like the hot.
movie, if you ever saw the Hobbit movie, all right, where all the dwarves come barging in on Bilbo. And just, you know, then they greet you, they're polite, but they think somehow that you're an Airbnb. And you're like, what? What? And just about the time you figure out that there's an army of people coming into your house that you may not know, that you certainly didn't invite, the last person happens to be Jesus. And what you were going to say?
You don't say.
You don't say. You can't say. And the next thing you know, there they are, muddy shoes on your nice furniture. Jesus sitting in the living room. And you're left to try to figure out, how am I going to feed 13 unexpected people? How am I going to lodge all of these? Remember, there's no refrigeration. There's no going out to the garage to get the freezer and pull out a roast or something. No, no, no. And there's no fast food restaurants. There's no getting ribs or chicken or pizza and bringing it into the house to help. No. You got to figure out with what you got what you're going to do. And you got to find a place where are they all going to sleep. The bathrooms. And you're running around and you're doing the best you can. Because unfortunately for you, you have a reputation. You have a reputation as having a nice big house. You have a reputation for a sweet flower garden. You have a reputation that the linens are fresh, that the house is spick and span, and that you know how to set an excellent table. That's not a bad reputation. But you kind of feel like she would like to be able to go to Jesus and say, you know, Jesus, there's nothing wrong with saying that you're coming before you show up. Nothing wrong with sending a note. You've been sending messengers everywhere else. You don't send a messenger to me? Really? And she's having a little bit of a difficult time. You see, it's different when we see the story this way. All of a sudden, you've got 13 unexpected guests showing up at your house. You have a reputation, and now there's pressure. Now, if you're familiar with the story, and I know you are, Luke never says that Martha was too busy. He never says that she was overcommitted or overextended. She says she was worried and distracted. Her attention was on something else. It's kind of like when you learn how to play catch. You gotta watch the ball. And she's not watching the ball. And she's missing it. She's missing it. Maybe Martha's last name is Stewart. And she's worried about, you know, she just got that reputation. She's missing the point. She's missing the opportunity. Think about it. You've got Jesus in your living room, and you're counting napkins. Where are your priorities? What is messed up? What is going on? Why are you so concerned about things that just aren't right, that just aren't what you're supposed to be doing? But that's where Martha is. And I have tried, those of you who are in the Bible study know, I have tried to read this story as a story about balance. About balance. See, the problem with it is the Bible. Have you ever noticed how the Bible messes you up? Here it is, supposed to help us, and I'm trying to find, all right, here we are. It's a story about balance. There's a time to be busy and a time not to be busy, and all that wonderful, beautiful baloney. You say, Don, that you've called the Bible. No. Because what does Jesus say? Jesus does take side. He just doesn't take Martha's side. What does Jesus say? Mary has chosen the better part. And it will not be taken away. Jesus isn't talking about balance. See, the Christian life is not about balance. The Christian life is about extravagance. You think about it. When you read the Bible, when you hear how God is working in people's lives, in our lives, when we see it in the Bible, it is always about an extravagant love that God has for us. Extravagant love, extravagant grace that knows no bounds, knows no limits, reaches to wherever people are, and God's extravagant says, "You are my child. I love you. I redeem you. You are always, always, always in my life. You are always a part of me." There is no balance about that at all. It's not like we have to meet an agenda. It is always extravagance, extravagance, extravagance. You read some of Jesus' the most famous parables, and that's where it is. It's all extravagance. They all point in the same direction. The pearl of great price, the treasure in the field, the lost coin, the lost sheep, the lost coin. It is extravagant. It is not reasonable. It makes no sense. But that's how God's love and grace works. It's extravagant. And those who allow that love to come into their lives all of a sudden find that there is a flame that kindles in their own heart. And they begin to love God and love Jesus with that same passionate, unreasonable behavior. And all of a sudden, they're tithing and giving time and giving talents and wanting to be a servant of the Lord. They want to be a disciple. They want to do these things. They want to, even if they stumble and fail, they get up because they want to please God. Those of you who are parents, how many times did you fail? My kids would have a list going, except that we ran out of paper. It just all, but it doesn't stop you from getting up and wanting to try again. Because why? Because you love them. You absolutely adore them. You want to be in their lives. You want to do what you can for them. And the same thing with our life with Christ. We do this because we are wildly, madly, deeply in love with Jesus. Now, as soon as Jesus entered Martha's house, he turned everything upside down. He did. He just, you know, everything. He messed around with Martha's expectations and routines and habits about how she thought the day was going. Have you ever noticed how Jesus messes your routine up? Here you got a perfectly good agenda. You got a good plan for your life. You know exactly this is going to go to here. And then you're connecting the dots. And you show Jesus how you connected the dots. And Jesus says, "Yeah, we're not doing that." And he's going, "It's a good plan. We're not doing that." He comes in the house, he just upsets everything. He changes everything. You see, you can't have Jesus in your house and have Jesus in your life and not think that you're going to be in control. You're not in control anymore. Jesus is in control. And your expectations and your routines and your habits, you don't get to have Jesus in your life and carry forth with your priorities and your agendas and your opinion. If Jesus is going to be in your life, is he going to be your Lord? Then that means he's going to be in charge. And he's going to be in control. Mary recognized that. She recognized that she had Jesus in her house. "I've got Jesus in my house. I've got Jesus in my house." And she's sitting at his feet and she wants to absorb everything he teaches, everything he has to say. She wants to be in his presence. She's just totally understanding that Jesus is not an ordinary guest. He's the guest who would be host, who serves the living bread that feeds and sustains us. It's easy sometimes to lose sight of Mary because we live in a work-frenzied, performance-driven life, and it's easy to believe that somehow just sitting and listening to Jesus is a waste of time when we're living in such a broken world where people need to be free, where there needs to be some type of justice, where those who are afflicted need to be comforted. There are things to do and hurts to be healed, and we need to be out in the world doing these things. We don't have time to sit at the feet of Jesus. If we don't have time to sit at the feet of Jesus, what do we have time for? We've got to be informed. But Jesus doesn't call Martha out because of her hospitality. He doesn't call her out because she's too busy or too active. It's not her cooking or cleaning or serving that bothers him. What does it say? Jesus says, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things." That root word for worry means to strangle. It means to seize by the throat and tear. It is the exact same word Jesus had used earlier in his ministry. Remember the parable of the sower? And some of the seed fell on the soil with the thorns, which strangled it and prohibited it from growing. That's the word. That's the word being used here. And distracted. Distracted is, I know you love this, the Greek, here we go. The Greek word, perispoomai. It's the only time it's used in the New Testament. The only time. And it literally means to be pulled from all directions. A separation or a dragging apart of something that should be whole. Strangled, seized by the throat and torn. Violent words, pulled apart from all directions. These words wound and fracture. States of mind that render us divided, fragmented, unwhole, and unhealthy. And Martha is in that state of fragmentation. She is in such a condition she can no longer enjoy Jesus' company, cannot savor his presence, cannot find inspiration in her work, receive anything that he would love to be able to offer her, or show him any genuine love. She is so upset. She is so fringed. She's so torn. And all she can do is question his love. Did you hear that in the text? Do you not care? You ever pray that prayer? If you're honest. Lord, don't you care? Don't you see? Lord, don't you care? She is so fragmented that all she can think about is herself. Did you hear what else she said? My sister has left me to do all the work by myself. Now this is what's going to... Mark is right. Martha is absolutely right. She's angry, she's frustrated, and she goes to Jesus and tells him exactly how she feels. That is authentic prayer. She doesn't stay seething in the kitchen. She doesn't just keep it all tight and I'm not, but she doesn't share anything with anyone. No, she tells Jesus, Jesus already knows how you feel. She's just being authentic and open. And if we're honest with ourselves, then we know that we have Martha moments too. We have times when our life is so fragmented and strangled that we struggle to give and receive love. We have times when we struggle and when we worry, then it's just strangling us and choking us and ripping us apart. Our responsibilities are overwhelming. There are times when we want to go to Jesus and say, do you not see? Do you not care? And Jesus answers us. But what if we hear Jesus' words not as a criticism, but as an invitation? Not as a rebuke, but as an opportunity to make a correction with our own choices? What if we hear Jesus' words not as a condemnation, but as a soothing balm that recognizes and sees our pain and our ache to be whole? Jesus knows that we place brutal and devastating expectations on ourselves. Jesus knows our resentments and our frustrations and our anger. Jesus knows our need to be healed and made whole. And so Jesus invites us to let go of our burdens, to surrender our worries, and allow Him to host us. Sometimes we go to Jesus, even in our anger, and we don't need a Snickers bar, and we don't need to rage or smash, and we don't need to wash something. Maybe what we need is an attitude adjustment. I mentioned the movie Emperor's New Groove. And in that movie, we find a very self-absorbed, self-centered, me emperor named Cusco, who ends up being transformed at first into a llama, but then later ends up being transformed into a real human being who cares for others. That's the emperor's new groove. And I'd like to think that our story about Martha, that the story of Martha continues after verse 42. And we discover that Martha gets her groove back. That she rediscovers how much God really does love her and care for her, how much Jesus cares for her, that her worth is not in what she does, even though what she does is very, very good. But it is in who she is, because she is loved very, very much. Maybe it's not about a new groove, but how she got her groove back. Because somehow, all that busyness, she has lost the better part of herself. She has lost her bearings. She has, in all that chaos and confusion and busyness of her life, she has lost her center. And after this encounter, she is able to regain and rediscover. Because after all, it's not what she does. It's not her work. It's not her ministry. That's the problem. It's her attitude. And people say, well, Don, how do you know that? How do you know that Martha got her groove back? How do you know that it worked? And I say, in all honesty, because that's how I got my groove back. That's how I get it back when I'm out of touch and off center. That's what I do. And you can too. I say, I know that it worked because if you continue to read the Bible and you get to the Gospel of John, and you get to chapter 11, when Jesus says, I am the resurrection. When Martha's brother has died, her heart is broken. And Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. And she says, I believe. She says, you are the Christ, the Son of God. In the midst of her heartbreak and sorrow and grief, she makes a declaration of faith. Her angry moment is not her last moment. Her angry moment allowed her to recover her groove, get back in the faith, and continue then to be able to give a positive witness of how God continues to work, even in the midst of tragedy. Now maybe Martha did not invite Jesus into her home. Maybe he did show up uninvited. But he came because he knew that Martha needed an attitude adjustment. He knew that there was a faithful disciple who was losing her grip, losing sight of what was important, and needed to know and be reminded that she too was redeemed. Needed to know that she too was loved. Because Jesus wanted to help her get her groove back. And so Jesus invites us to an attitude adjustment. And it begins with a full surrender of agenda and priorities and opinions and simply sitting at His feet in His presence and discovering that Jesus is the ultimate host. Jesus offers what only Jesus can give. And Jesus gives to us exactly what we need.